Cape Talk.
Food. Now, in a perfect world, men and women would share all household responsibilities equally, and the pressure to be a good homemaker would be a shared one. But the fact remains that many women still shoulder this burden either entirely on their own or certainly in a disproportionate ratio compared to what their partner does around the home. And the pressure to meet other people's expectations is real. And it's that pressure that sparked the idea for a Joburg-based business called The Lazy Makoti, and which has led to the founder's first cookbook being published by Quivertree, The Lazy Makoti's Guide to the Kitchen. And it's a great pleasure to welcome the founder and author, Michal Seshwena, to our Johannesburg studio. Lovely to chat to you, and welcome to Cape Talk, Michal.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm absolutely tickled by the name of your business because I believe it means the lazy bride. Won't you tell us the story behind the name?
Yes. So I was working in corporate and a friend of mine needed cooking lessons. And this was primarily because she was due to get married and knew that the expectations of her new family would be that she know how to cook, and particularly know how to cook traditional South African food. Mm. I then gave her these cooking classes and she would say all the time, she's so scared that they're going to be calling her the Lazy Makoti. And the name kind of stuck.
I love it. So you decided to keep the name. And of course, you helped your friend initially. Michal, what did you take her through?
Mm-hmm. So just easy favorites. Everything I'm guessing everyone's going to be making over this festive season. How to make some ginger beer, how to make dombolo, how to make chakalaka, all South African favorites.
Okay, so it started with helping out one friend. You realized there was business potential in this concept, and that is where the Lazy Makoti mm-hmm. concept was born. I know the idea is that you take those lessons out on the road. So you will go into somebody's home or even into a corporate space, I believe, and run them through the courses. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now.
Yes. Sorry,
carry on.
So yeah, it started off me going into people's homes and giving these classes, and now I have a studio where people come in and they take these cooking classes.
Okay, so you do a bit of both. You bring them to you and you go to them. Mm-hmm. You mentioned you were working in corporate. Mm-hmm. I believe you were actually on track to become an auditor when you threw caution to the wind. Yes. And decided to jump into the food industry. Was it something you'd been passionate about? I mean, did you grow up loving being involved with food?
Mm-hmm. I think this is the reason why my friend asked me, out of everyone, to give her these cooking classes. She knew that I had a great love for cooking. I actually don't understand why I didn't turn it into a career earlier.
Mm. Okay, so you made the decision that you were going to change direction mid-career and you went and trained as a chef. But I'm sure you must have drawn on the childhood experience and hence your particular love for teaching traditional South African dishes. Who were your early influences in childhood that you learned to cook with?
Definitely my mother. My mother cooks a lot. My grandmother as well. We enjoy a lot of cooking, spending time in the kitchen together. So definitely my childhood in Polokwane.
Okay. And what were the sort of the most memorable dishes that you learned to make alongside your mom and your grandmother?
So many South African favorites. Pap, chakalaka, tripe, so many. Mm-hmm. There's just so many. Which is why, there's a chapter actually in the book, Kumbule Kaya, that is the longest chapter in the book, and it's just traditional South African dishes.
It's an absolutely mouth-watering chapter. I mean, I was going through the book and not knowing where to start with what to try cooking. What I love about it is there are some simple starting dishes for those who are really mm-hmm. beginners that'll be able to tackle with mm-hmm. a great degree of confidence. And then you have those more complicated, elaborate. There's the full seven colors Sunday lunch gets a whole chapter. Mm-hmm. Besides the traditional South African dishes, what really caught my eye as being different about this new cookbook, Michal, is the fact that you've got a whole chapter dedicated to using leftovers creatively. I think it's such a brilliant idea. We're all about trying to reduce food waste. Talk to us about some mm-hmm. of the dishes that inspired that chapter.
So I guess that chapter was very heavily influenced by my childhood. You know, growing up, we weren't really allowed to throw food away. So you had to be creative and think of new ways to repurpose that same, you know, last night's dinner and have it today and have it not be the same thing. So that's really what inspired that chapter. You know, on Sunday, you make this huge meal and then the next day, you don't want to have exactly that. But then what do you do with so much leftovers? So one of my favorite dishes from there are the pies. So the stew or the curry that you make today and you're having that with rice, the next day just get some puff pastry and turn it into a pie and that's lunch for work.
The other one that looks absolutely mouthwatering is you've got a fantastic recipe for chakalaka, and then you take that and turn it into the base of a shakshuka breakfast the next day. So the chakalaka base with the eggs just popped in the top at the last minute to cook through. Really simple ideas but absolutely inspired ways to make everything taste fresh and taste like a completely new meal.
So that's also one of the things that I wanted the cookbook to be about, very simple cooking. I wanted you to not be intimidated, for everyone to be able to use the ingredients that are already in your fridge, already in your pantry, and make something amazing.
For those who've just joined the conversation, we're chatting to Mogao Seshwene, who's the author of a new cookbook called The Lazy Makoti's Guide to the Kitchen, published by Quivertree Publications. And it has grown out of her business, The Lazy Makoti, which is a mobile business in Johannesburg that goes to your home or brings you to her kitchen studio and teaches participants how to make beautiful South African dishes. Mogao, besides the personal pull of wanting to share with people the recipes that you grew up making and eating and enjoying, I know you feel very strongly about sort of doing credit to our own South African heritage. A lot of the cooking training that you find is offered focuses on, understandably, French cuisine, Asian cuisine, Italian cuisine, lots of history behind them. We understand why it happens, but you kind of felt like South Africa was being left behind and left out a little bit, didn't you?
Oh, I did. I absolutely did. One of my great passions is to celebrate and preserve traditional South African heritage and cooking and our cuisine. Because if we're not learning about it, it will die out. So a great passion of mine was that. And that's a very big part of what made the book, you know, come into being. That idea of celebrating and preserving traditional South African food, which is great feedback that I'm getting from everyone who says, you know, I'm paging through this book and for the first time I can see me in a cookbook, which is amazing.
That is fantastic. Having said that, I know you've also been exposed to some international travel. I believe you were a Mandela Washington Fellow a couple of years ago, which would have taken you to the USA. How do you incorporate what you learn and what you're exposed to when you travel to other countries and experience other cuisines? Do you make a point of trying to find a way of South Africanizing a dish or maybe bringing in a South African element into dishes you've tasted over there?
I do, actually. I am that person that will try turn it into a South African dish, whatever it is. I actually remember while I was there, I had the chance to go to an Asian market and I found tripe and this pickled mango that tastes like achar, and obviously tried to make it South African. So yes, I do believe that we should be proud and celebrate our own culture before we celebrate somebody else's.
Okay, Mogao, one of the recipes that caught my eye just for its beautiful simplicity in this book is your recipe for morocco. And it's not something that I think many white South Africans have been exposed to. It is an equivalent of spinach is about the closest I can get if you're looking for a European. But it's not spinach. It's pigweed leaves in the case of your recipe. And I guess many readers would go, who've not had it before, where do I even start to find ingredients like that? Where do you source the ingredients for your morocco?
It's actually not that difficult to find all of these ingredients. If you go to your nearest township, I'm sure you can find them. I mostly find them when I go home to Polokwane.
Okay. The Mopani worms, I know, are going to be a hard one for many people to swallow, literally and figuratively. Do you think they're worth giving a bash, though?
Definitely. I always say, if you can eat prawns, you can eat more bunny worms.
No difference except that where they live, I suppose. You did mention, I think earlier, that one of your favorite traditional recipes that really speaks to you of home is the tripe and steamed bread, the dombolo. And I think making your own bread is a little bit intimidating for some people, but the dombolo is really not that difficult. It just requires being patient and giving it all enough time to rise properly. Talk us through how you make yours.
Like the one of the great focuses of the book, and I keep saying, is that it's not difficult. Is that if you just go through the recipe and you see how easy it is, you won't be as intimidated. So that was one thing I wanted, everyone to take from this cookbook, that even I, you know, the person that doesn't cook every day, mm-hmm. can get into the kitchen and make these amazing meals.
Okay, so there is a recipe for tripe and steamed bread in the book, for those who are wondering. And very, very simple ingredients, as you say, just having the patience to let it all prove properly is the secret. I'm also intrigued, though, the one that really jumped out at me off the page was your recipe for jewelled pup, which is pup with all kinds of little extra pops of flavour and colour mixed into it. Won't you just chat to our listeners about how you prepare that?
One of my favorite recipes. I like for food to be colorful, to be beautiful. You know, we eat with our eyes before anything else. And of course, it must look amazing for the Instagram. so basically, it's your maize meal, some turmeric, and the three peppers, the red, yellow, and green pepper, and a bit of butter and some salt. And then you make the pap the way you would make it, except you add, you know, the peppers and the turmeric to give it that beautiful color. So it's going to be this yellowy pap that has the red and the yellow and the green of the peppers.
Okay. You've got an entire chapter on winter warmers with some beautiful soups and stews in there, including just a simple butternut soup, a beautiful chicken soup. Again, just sticking to good ingredients put together simply. You know, what struck me about the length of your recipes is they're not simple in flavor, but they are simple in the preparation in terms of it's five or six ingredients put together cleverly to unlock maximum flavor. You know, there's so many cookbooks you open these days and the list of ingredients is a page and a half long. It's incredibly intimidating and it's enough to put many people off before they even start. Which of those is the one that sort of speaks to you most of home? Because there is a comment in your book that nothing tastes as good as mama's cooking. And the winter warmer chapter particularly felt like that. It just felt like a hug from home, if I can put it that way. Is there any particular one of those recipes that for you epitomizes the experience of your mom's cooking?
Yes, definitely. The bean and bone soup definitely makes me think of home. It's a recipe my mom got from her mom, so it's that more special. And, you know, just to touch on the ease of these recipes, that's what I wanted, because throughout giving these classes, I would ask people to bring along their favorite cookbook. And I would notice that they only use two or three recipes from the book. Yeah. And I think that's such a waste, buying this entire book and you only end up using like a couple of recipes. I wanted this cookbook to be one that you use all the time, that you keep going back to, because it's that simple.
Again, just for those who might have joined us late to the conversation, my guest is Mogal Seshwena. The book is The Lazy Makoti's Guide to the Kitchen, published by Quivetry. And I couldn't help but notice the shout on the front cover from Dora Sitole, who I know is somebody that you have held up as a bit of a food icon through your life, Mogal. What does it mean to you to have her endorsing your book and, in fact, writing the introduction for you?
I actually just got teary. I love Mama Dora. I remember, you know, growing up as a child, my mom had a subscription to one of the magazines she was a food editor of, and it would be my job to cut out her recipes and put them in a book for my mom. So you can imagine how special it was to have her contribute to the foreword of my first cookbook, and then to be in conversation with her at the launch. It was just... yeah, a dream come true, a real dream come true.
Did she pick out any particular recipes of yours that she'd already tried or was looking forward to trying, given that she's got such a lifetime of experience in the food industry?
She really loved the Kumbule Kaya chapter, which I think is everybody's favorite, because everyone is so pleasantly surprised to find a chapter that is about them. you know, to find this book that is me, that reflects South Africa. So she was very, very happy about that chapter.
Well, I just want to share with our listeners a little fraction of what one of your other endorsers wrote. Matapa Rikotso, model and TV personality, wrote the following about your book. Through cooking, we create institutional memories. And after attempting to make a few of your dishes, I now feel like I have a PhD in cooking and my family enjoys the food to the very last crumb. That must have made your heart sing, because it's exactly that sense of preserving the memory of traditional South African dishes and putting them back front and center on the household table, which is what you set out to do. The big question is, Mahav, is where to from here? I know that you have you've dabbled in TV a bit. You had a pop-up show on the pop-up channel of DSTV not too long ago. You've got your cooking classes run as the business, the Lazy Makoti. You've also launched your own range of cooking utensils and aprons, etc. Where do you see this going from here? Now that you've got your first cookbook under your wing, what's your vision for the Lazy Makoti brand going forward?
You know, I think a lot of work still has to be done to preserve and celebrate traditional South African foods, but I have my sights set on the rest of the continent.
On the rest of the continent, tell us more. Does that mean expanding into the rest of Africa, or perhaps traveling into the rest of Africa and learning about their cuisines? What do you mean by that?
So traveling and learning about the rest of the continent and their cuisines, I think a lot of work still has to be done to understand African cuisines. And I'd like to be the person teaching everyone about that. You know, as much as we know about French and Italian and everybody else's cuisines, why don't we know as much about African food?
And I have to mention, there is in fact a chapter at the end of the book talking to exactly that ambition, closing off with just a couple of the really delicious dishes from the rest of Africa, like the jollof rice from Nigeria, mm-hmm. and there's a fried rice with shrimp dish. You're using plantains in one of the dessert recipes. So you've already sort of stuck your toe in the water. I, for one, can't wait to read the follow-up book that takes you on that journey a little bit further into Africa. A question from our listener Keith, asking about ginger beer. Mm-hmm. I know you have a recipe in the book for ginger beer with scones, and I don't want mm-hmm. you to give away the whole recipe, but what advice for Keith if he'd like to replicate your ginger beer?
Keith should get the book.
can you at least share a couple of
tips? Keith should definitely get the book.
Of course he should. Everybody should get the book. It's beautiful. But what are some of the key sort of steps in the process of making your own ginger beer?
I'd say make it a day or two in advance. Definitely make it a day or two in advance. Give it time to sit. It'll taste amazing.
Okay, so letting that flavor develop is crucial. I know that I've noticed you use a touch of fruit in your recipe, a handful of raisins, mm-hmm. and the peel of a pineapple is a recipe that caught an ingredient that caught me by surprise. What does that add to the flavor profile?
So that just helps with the fermentation.
Okay.
It makes it quicker for the beer to ferment.
Aha, so the pineapple plays the fermenting role. Okay. And then Keith, in case you're interested, Mahau also uses ginger powder versus ginger root. You go for the powder. Is that just a preference in terms of the final outcome?
It's just a preference in terms of the final outcome. And also I have very strong preference for ingredients that are not only easy to find, but easier to work with.
Okay. Keith, thank you for the interesting question. Thank you to Lisa, wondering what you are going to be serving on your Christmas table this year, Macha.
This Christmas, I'm cooking from the book, obviously. Mm. I'll probably cook the entire Seven Colors chapter.
Wow, you're going to be in the kitchen for a long time. I hope you've got some helpers to get stuck in with you, because it is a spread of note.
It is. I definitely will have help. My entire family, lucky for me, loves cooking.
That is lucky indeed. So you will at least have some helpers. Okay, the likes, by the way, in the Seven Colors chapter include southern baked chicken, beautiful Hasselback style potato bake, lamb shanks with lentils, and a gorgeous red wine and beef stock gravy. There is the traditional butternut stuffed with creamed spinach is an absolute classic. you again, the lovely ideas on how to use the leftovers the following day, if there are any. Although I suspect, mm-hmm. looking at the quality of the photographs, everyone will be licking the dishes. Mahal, I don't know how many leftovers they're going to be at the end of this one. I also think it's worth mentioning that you include a chapter on breakfasts in the book, right at the start of the book, quite appropriately. And mm-hmm. that includes really good advice on making all forms of eggs, from poached to scrambled to boiled. The most common question we get on this food segment is how to make a poached egg, because it's something that so many people struggle to get right. What's your particular method?
So, very easy to make. Someone asked, why would you include a recipe on how to make eggs? Doesn't everybody know? And interestingly enough, I still get, through the cooking classes, someone that'll ask, how do I boil an egg and for how long? And so I decided, let's start at the very beginning. Mm. How do you boil an egg? How do you fry an egg? How do you poach an egg? So basically, make sure that your water is boiling. And then use a spoon to sort of give the water a stirring motion. And then you might want to break the egg into a dish and not break it into the actual egg. So break it into a cup or a dish and then lower it into the water.
Okay.
So that your egg doesn't break.
Okay, that's really important. Do you also add half a teaspoon of vinegar to your water? Do you do that at the beginning or only once boiling?
So at the beginning.
Okay.
So it's water, vinegar, and then let it boil.
And then only then lower in that egg, which you've already cracked elsewhere.
Yes.
Okay, thanks for the tip on that one. Boy, somebody who is drooling listening to this interview on our WhatsApp line is John, who's just messaged to say, well-fried mapani worms with a little garlic sauce is really good, as is a good mild curry tripe and a lekker pap with some butter and a good beef gravy. I am drooling, says John. Mm. John, you remind me of my very first job writing radio news bulletins in the deep dark bowels of a building at 4 o'clock in the morning where nobody else was at work. And as I left that shift at sort of 11 o'clock later in the day, the canteen would be putting out the first dish of curried tripe, and the smell was mouth-watering, and there would be an early queue on the day. I think it was Mondays that there was tripe on the menu. There would be a queue out the door of the canteen. So John, I can understand why you react in that way. It is something that for some people is just too big a leap to try, but it is worth trying. It's one of those things that once you overcome what might be a mental block, it really is something worth trying. And I have to say, I've never been brave enough to try a mapani worm, but if I was to try one, your recipe of this gorgeous peanutty sauce that they're prepared in looks mouthwatering. It might be enough to twist my arm, Mocha. So thank you for that. I'd love to leave our listeners
with you some.
Yeah, next time you come to Cape Town, okay, that's a deal. Pop into studio, please, and bring us a plate.
Definitely.
To try. Now, I want to just tell everybody where to pick up a copy of the book. It is called The Lazy Makoti's Guide to the Kitchen, published by Quivertry. Is it out in all the bookstores yet, Mocha?
Yes, yes. The book is available everywhere. Exclusive Books, CNA, Bargain Books, Loot, Take a Lot. It's very, very easy to find.
Okay, and it is really worth looking for, particularly if you are looking for a gift for the foodie in the family. Consider this for the upcoming holiday season, and consider taking it along with you on holiday if you want some really simple but utterly delicious food to put on your family table. It's been a pleasure chatting to you, Mahal, and thank you so much for making the time to pop into our Joburg studio to be with us today. Can't wait for the next book, the next TV series, and whatever may lie ahead for The Lazy Makoti. I do think it's a fun name, but it's certainly sounds like you are anything but lazy in the way you're running the business and growing the brand. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Mahal Seshwene is the name of the author. The book's retailing at around about 340 Rand a copy in stores now.